All right. Good morning, everyone. So we are going to continue Meretz Hashem in Gan Eden. We're going to continue in Gan Eden and Meretz Hashem this morning. I think Gan Eden may take us a little bit into Wednesday as well, but we'll see. We'll see what happens over the course of this morning. Okay. So remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit, we spent a significant amount of time focusing on what was Gan Eden. More specifically, focusing on what was the avoda of man in Gan Eden. We saw the various mefarshim. At the end of the day, the conclusion that we come to is that it need not be a contradiction. Although at first glance it appears that what it was is la'avda l'shamra, spiritual avoda, is la'avda l'shamra, physical gashmi avoda, it need not be a machlokas. How do we resolve the seemingly contradictory opinions? How do we resolve them? What was the core avoda of Gan Eden? To work hard, to work successfully, and to go ahead and try to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and see the Ribono Shel Olam in everything. In everything. You know what? Is there not a tablet? Okay, perfect. Perfect. Thank you. Usually the office emails me if I bring my iPad, but I didn't get an email. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so we see that it's not really a stira. It's not a contradiction at all. Rather, the essence of Gan Eden is a place to work on your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The great challenge in life is often we bifurcate our relationship with God. And we assume that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu happens in certain areas of life, but doesn't happen in other areas of life. And you know, part of the beauty of Yiddishkeit in general, you know, it's an amazing thing if you think about which areas of life does the Torah HaKadosha regulate? What does it regulate? What areas of life does the Torah regulate? Correct. Simple answer. Every single area of your life. Think about this for just a moment. From the way you put on your shoes in the morning to the most intimate details of our lives, the Torah HaKadosha regulates it. Now, why is that? Because the Ribono Shel Olam is a micromanager? Because Hashem Baruch Hu is a control freak? That's why Hashem Baruch Hu does it? No. It's to be able to show us that there is Kedusha in everything. There is Kedusha in everything. There is Kedusha in intimacy. There is Kedusha in how you put on your shoes. There is Kedusha in how you work. And there is Kedusha in how you eat. There is Kedusha in everything in life. You see, for us, we say this. I know I'm not telling you any Kedusha. You know this already. But here's the difference. In the Gan Eden world, that reality was apparent. In the Gan Eden world, Adam didn't see a stira in anything. He didn't see, oh, when I daven, that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. But when I work, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not there. Adam HaRishon saw no stira. There was Avodas Hashem in everything. If you want to know at the end of the day, what was the power of Gan Eden? What was the essence of Gan Eden? It was that there was no bifurcation of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was no split. There was no divide. Everything was Avodas Hashem. And everything could be used to create your relationship. Now, isn't that amazing? Isn't that Gan Eden? Isn't that better? You know, sometimes when you think about Gan Eden, right, we have this image in our minds, beautiful streams and rolling hills, and the stuff just comes out of the ground, and you don't have to work. That's all fantastic. Maybe that was Gan Eden also. But to live in a world where everything you do, you see as a form of Avodas Hashem, you see literally as a part of your Avodas HaBore, that's Gan Eden. And now you understand, by the way, what it means to live in the post-Gan Eden world. So what happened when Adam Rishon was kicked out of Gan Eden? What happened? I'm sorry? What happened when Adam was kicked out of Gan Eden? Thank you very much. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. What happened when Adam is kicked out of Gan Eden?
Nothing's clear.
Nothing's clear. Remember again, one of the first stories that happens right after Adam is kicked out of Gan Eden was what? One of the first stories. Good. Not a trick question, I promise. Cain and Hevel. Right? One of the first. What's the whole story of Cain? At the end of the day, the story of Cain and Hevel, does it bother any of you? Besides the fact that a brother killed a brother. All right, that little detail. Right? Does anything about the essence of the story bother you? What bothers you? This is very important. I want to tell you something because sometimes You know, when we read the stories in Bereishis, we don't read it with a critical eye. And I often say, if you want to really appreciate Bereishis, especially if you want to appreciate Chumash, especially the stories, you have to read them as if you've never seen them before. You have no idea what's going to happen at the end. And if you read it like that, you read it with a critical eye like that, you see details that emerge. Yes, what's the problem with the story? I'll give you a hint. It wasn't Hevel.
Okay.
Good, excellent.
Oh,
the most glaring, excellent. The most glaring problem in the story is that it was Cain's idea to bring a carbon. It was Cain's idea. It wasn't Hevel's idea. Hevel copied his older brother. Now, while it's true that Hevel, quote unquote, brought something nicer than Cain did, but Cain is the innovator of the carbon. So what ends up happening over here? See what ends up happening is, so you know the story, and the truth is, this is not our topic. We could devote, maybe I'll find a way to tie it into Perek Shira, because analyzing that story of Cain and Hevel, and the Ribono Shel Olam's reaction to Cain is quite dramatic. Because when you look at the story again, pretend like you don't know what happens at the end. Because remember, you know, we approach a lot of the stories in Chumash it already a little bit, I'm going to use the word tainted, right? So the first time you hear about Esav, what's your reflexive reaction? I say Esav, you say?
Rasha.
Right? That's it. Right? I say Yishmael, you say? Also usually Rasha, right? Meaning, the idea is because we know what these people become, so because we know what they become, we read that identity and personality into the beginning of the story. But that's often, so when we hear about Cain, he's the guy who killed his brother. So of course, from the beginning of the story, so we have this image of like, he's a miser, he's cheap, he doesn't want to give a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What are you talking about? He's the first person that said, you know what? I work all day working the ground. I should take from my work, from what I do, and I should give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What a thought. What a thought. I spend my whole day working the ground. Let me take what I do for whatever, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, how many hours a day he worked, and they give it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, godless. It's absolute godless. But what ends up happening, you see, without getting into the details of the story, because it's not our topic, but what ends up happening in the post-Gan Eden world is it's just a fundamental lack of clarity. Right, so Cain gets all upset. Lama naflu panecha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this incredibly strange phrase. Right, imtativ seis. If you better yourself, you lift yourself up. But if not, lepesach chatos rovitz. Sin waits for you at the entrance. Right? What exactly that even means is not abundantly clear. But let's just take it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you're doing great. Just try to do better. But for some reason, like in the post-Gan Eden world, there's this lack of clarity. All Cain needed to do, all he needed to do was somehow, quote unquote, do better. Whatever do better would actually mean. That's all he needed to do. But in the post-Gan Eden world, he just simply, for whatever the reason, can't get it together. And isn't the Chumash filled, isn't the story of humanity filled with good people who just for whatever reason lacked the clarity to do the right thing. You know, a great example of a person who lacked the clarity to do the right thing was who? And there's no shortage of examples. But if you were to think of another example, anyone? I often think of Lot. To me, Lot is like the paradigmatic example of a person who has so much goodness inside of him, but for whatever the reason, just like can never pull the trigger on that goodness. Right? He's with Avram Avinu, then he decides to go to Sodom. But remember again, what does he make of himself in Sodom? Who is Lot in Sodom? I think you all have to start drinking caffeinated coffee. At least again, I'm going to set up a little urn over here. Hey, so remember again, who does Lot become in Sodom? Right? He's the Shofet. Remember, remember, Lot is like the Avram Avinu of stone, right? He's the tzaddik of stone. So you have a man who was living with Avram, then goes to settle in stone. When he's in stone, he becomes the tzaddik of stone. And by the way, what does the tzaddik of stone do after stone is destroyed? He impregnates his two daughters. Right? To the point, by the way, not that society was all that moral, but even great, remember again, like Rashi points out, even Avraham Avinu had to distance himself from Lot after that, meaning there are certain things that are just, even without a Torah, and even without Shem Mitzvah B'nai Noach, there are certain just basic codes of morality that people adhere to. So how could it be like, what's the pshat with a person like that? What's the pshat with a man like that, who is a nephew of Avraham Avinu, resembled Avraham Avinu, and Chazal said that he looked like Avraham Avinu? It wasn't just talking about external appearance, but it's also talking about in terms of internal goodness. Remember, it's important to know, Lot went with Avram when Avram went on the Lech Lecha journey. He didn't have to go. He didn't have to go. So can you imagine he decides to go ahead and follow his uncle on this far-flung journey? Oh God spoke to you. Yeah, I spoke to you, told you Lech Lecha. And you don't know, by the way, where you're going. You don't know exactly where you're going. Sure, I'll come along. My calendar is clear for the next 75 years. I'm happy to come with you. Doesn't make any sense because Lot has so much goodness. In Stone, he tries to introduce Achnasas Archim, but yet engages in two repeated acts of incest. See, it's very symptomatic of the post-Gan Eden world. Then in the post-Gan Eden world, everything becomes so blurry and everything becomes so obscured. In Gan Eden, the Ribono Shel Olam, the ability to forge a relationship was clear and was apparent. Whether you were davening, learning, working the soil, keeping the animals out, whatever you were doing, Avodas Hashem was apparent. Just, I want to point out, so I'm sure many of you have learned Mesilas Yesharim. So the Ramchal speaks about the Midah of Chasidus, right? So how does the Ramchal define Chasidus? Anyone know? Anyone remember? How does it define Chasidus? So the Ramchal defines Chasidus as trying to figure out what is the Ratzon Habore. What is the Ratzon Habore? And then going forward with it, right? Meaning, to be a good Jew, I have to listen to what God tells me. The Chasid says, okay, the mitzvahs, they're like Mar Makomos, they're like sources. The mitzvahs tell us, this is what Hashem likes. The chassid then says, okay, now that I know what Hashem likes, I'm going to go even further. So for example, I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to give tzedakah. It's the mitzvah to give tzedakah. Now that I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to give tzedakah, the chassid says, okay, now I know that kindness, charity, chesed is important to the Ribono Shel Olam. So I'm going to go above and beyond even that which is required of me because I now see that that is what my God likes. But you know, there's something called the chesed shota. What's a chesed shota? Where your piety just is unchecked. Like your piety just borders on the bizarre. Like it doesn't make sense. And the Ramchal writes about this. He says, chasidus is very dangerous because many times people think that what they're doing is pious. But at the end of the day, they're way off base. You know, one of the paradigmatic examples that the Ramchal gives, anyone know? One of the paradigmatic the Ramchal gives of misplaced piety? I'm sorry? So the Burqa ladies might be a good example. The Ramchal doesn't give that one, but yes, that might be a good contemporary one. Yes? So good. A person who gives tzedakah to the point of impoverishment. Good. Any other thoughts? The Ramchal gives the example, if you remember again, of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulus. The Gemara Maseches Gittin tells the story of Kamtza bar Kamtza. Right? Kamtza bar Kamtza. We know, you know the story, right? Again, based on the Mishnah, because it comes to Bar Kamtza. Ultimately, again, so Bar Kamtza gets very upset, goes and tries to incite the Caesar against the Jews. So he tells the Caesar, Mardu Becha Yehudai, the Jews have rebelled against you. So the Caesar, amazingly enough, doesn't believe it. So Zechariah ben Avkulus, I'm sorry, so Bar Kamtza says, I'll show you. Send the carbon, send an offering, and you see the Jews aren't going to accept this. Remember, again, you know the story. So he sends the carbon, Caesar sends, what does Zechariah ben Avkulus do? I'm sorry, what does Bar Kamtza do? He gives it a mum, right? You might see there he split its lip or he did something to its eye, something that by the Gentile nations would not be considered a mum, but we consider a mum. So remember again, now you have to imagine this scene. The carbon from the Caesar shows up in the Beis HaMikdash. Everyone's first reaction is, what do you do with it? If I were to ask you, what should you do with it? What would you say? Offer it. Don't even pretend. Offer it. Offer it, offer it, offer it. This is the Caesar. He has the ability to kill all of us. Offer it. Offer it. Zechariah ben Avkulus says, no, you can't offer it. Can't offer it because then people will say that you're allowed to offer a bal mum. You're allowed to offer a blemished animal. So the other rabbanim said, fine, let's kill bar kamtza. Bar kamtza has the status of a moser. That word is unfortunately very misused in today's lexicon, right? A moser means someone who goes ahead and turns over Jews to a despotic, corrupt government. So they say, let's kill bar kamtza. Let's kill bar kamtza, right? Let's kill bar kamtza. Again, I just want to be clear, just a word about that. You know, there are plenty of situations in halacha where one is mandated to call the authorities. Chas v'shalom in situations of abuse, chas v'shalom in other situations that could put other people in danger. People like to say that's masir. That is not masir. That is a halachic imperative. If you know that someone else is in danger, it is a halachic imperative to call the authorities to safeguard the life of that individual. Masira means when you go ahead and you give over Jews to a corrupt, despotic government out of a sense of sin, out of a sense of hatred for Jews. So say we should kill bar kamtza. We have every right to execute bar kamtza. So Rabbi Chaya ben Akkol said, no, you can't execute bar kamtza because what's going to happen? People are going to say that the punishment for blemishing the sacrificial animal is death. So what happened? What ended up happening? Nothing happened. The carbon wasn't offered. Bar kamtza wasn't killed. Bar kamtza goes back to the Caesar. He tells the Caesar, you see, the Jews have rebelled against you. And ultimately, again, the korban occurs. The Gemara says something scathing. The Gemara says, "An visonuso shirabi Zechariah ben Avkolos hichriv es beisenu." It was, they call it humility, but the humility really means the inaction. The inaction of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkolos destroyed our Beis HaMikdash. Ramchal uses this as an example of misplaced humility. Misplaced piety. Misplaced piety. Zechariah ben Avkolos is trying to do the right thing. He's definitely trying to do the right thing. Right? We don't want people to gain erroneous impressions or different things. It was misplaced piety. And the Ramchal says that misplaced piety is incredibly dangerous. What is misplaced piety a result of? What is it a result of? I'm sorry? Could be gaiva. Although, again, it would be hard to say in the case of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkolos, it would be gaiva. But yes, many times it could be gaiva. What else could it be a result of? Not really knowing. And you see, this is my point. Not really knowing, because in life, sometimes we lack an incredible amount of clarity. Right? You're all young, so maybe you haven't gotten to a point in life yet where you have to ask yourself the question, like, what is the Ratzon Hashem in a particular situation? As you get older, you'll be confronted by situations in life, and I have to ask myself, what is the Ratzon Hashem in this particular circumstance? And sometimes, it's exceptionally hard to answer that question. Sometimes the Ratzon Hashem is not abundantly clear. And that's what it means to live outside of Gan Eden. When you live in Gan Eden, there's absolute clarity. There's clarity in my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, no matter what I'm doing. Outside of Gan Eden, there's a lot of things are obscured, and a lot of things just are not clear. And in fact, again, fast forward a little bit. Remember, again, there's a big machlokis about when Mashiach comes, what the world is going to look like. Is it going to be a supernatural world? Is it going to be a natural world? But one thing everyone agrees on is that the presence and the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be absolutely and unequivocally known. What does that mean? Everyone's going to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On a deeper level, what it means is the world is once again going to be blessed with that sense of clarity. The clarity that Adam HaRishon had. Now, again, is the clarity foolproof?
No.
No, how do you know it's not foolproof? That's Adam sin. So remember again, Bechira is Bechira, right? You always have Bechira. And again, the ability to make bad choices is what makes us human, right? If you were not allowed to make bad choices, you would be a malach or you'd be a computer, right? But at the end of the day, Lemaisa, there's always Bechira. So even when there's clarity, clarity is not foolproof. You can still make bad decisions. But at least again, but remember, see, here's the difference. When you have clarity and you make bad decisions, what happens? What happens? It's much worse when you don't know. That's true. But what happens when you... I have clarity, I make a bad decision. What happens to me now? I realize it. There is immediate realization. Remember again, what does the Pasuk say after Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Das Tovara? What happens? Vayedu ke'iru menhem. They knew that they were unclothed. And Rashi says, not just physically unclothed, but they were naked from mitzvahs. They had lost that spiritual clothing. See, here's the difference also. You see, in the post-Gan Eden world, sometimes things are so blurry that even after I do something, it's not even clear to me that I did something wrong. Right? Sometimes in the post-Gan Eden world, like, things are so, I'll call it spiritually muffled, that I don't even know that what I did was incorrect. At least in the Gan Eden world, yes, you have Bechira to make bad decisions, but when you make them, I know what I've done is wrong. And remember, knowing that you've made a mistake is such a profound thing, because once I've made a mistake, then what? Then at least I have the koach and the ability to go out and fix it. So now, in the post, so what happens post Gan Eden? So now obviously we are outside of Gan Eden, already from Adam HaRishon. So what do we do now? Or better stated, how do we find Gan Eden in our own lives? Take a look at number 10. The Al-Sheikh on Shir HaShirim says something truly beautiful. So remember again, what we're going to focus on today is the pasuk from Shir HaShirim that Gan Eden focuses on. The pasuk, which you could take a look at it in number 2, the pasuk that we had really no idea what it's talking about. Uri Tzafon Uboi Seimon, arouse yourself, north wind, and come, O south wind, or come south. Hafichi Gani Yizlu Bisamav, blow upon my garden, let the spices flow out. Yavo Dodi Ligano, let my beloved come to his garden. V'yachal pri megadav, and eat of its precious fruit. So comes along the Al-Sheikh in number 10 and says something amazing. Al-Kain, Tashiv Amara Ashkhina, I love Yisbach V'tomar. Yavo Dodi Ligano B'Sinai. Let's read the words and then we'll understand what the Al-Sheikh is saying. Let my beloved come to his garden. And where is the garden? What garden is Shir HaShirim referring to? Har Sinai. V'al Yidei Kain, Yushpa me'elehen v'yocha pri megadav shel gododi. When you come to the garden, you will be able to eat the fruit of the beloved. What is that? Hein ma'amorav yisparach aseres hadibros. What are the fruits of the garden? If the garden is Sinai, the fruits of the garden is Torah. The fruits of the garden are aseres hadibros. Shem ha'megadim kem ya'asu peros v'yochlein v'yekablim dodi. V'hu ki al kol dibor v'dibor she'otzei me'kadosh baruch hu, because every single dibor that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, hayu miskadshim u'masigin kisharon u'zuchuyos rabos. So stop over here, look at this. So the Al-Sheikh says something so beautiful. The Al-Sheikh says, yavo dodi ligano, means dodi, says the Al-Sheikh, means klal Yisrael. So listen to what the pasuk is saying. What's my goal in life? Right? What do I want? If you think about this, if I had one aspiration, what is it? What is it? I know this is a hard question. What would you think? To do Ratzon Hashem, absolutely. But that's the end. What I want is I want to get back to Gan Eden. Right? Isn't that what I want? And why do I want? Think about this. What do I want to get back to Gan Eden? More civilly, what do I want in Gan Eden? Clarity. What I want more than anything in life is clarity. Because it goes like, you're young. So Baruch Hashem, you have your whole lives ahead of you. You will see the greatest mistakes we make in life is not because we're bad. We're good. But the greatest mistakes you make in life is often because I lack clarity. Sometimes it's, I lack episodic clarity. In other words, I don't know about clarity in this particular situation. But a lot of people walk through life in general without clarity. Who am I? What do I stand for? What are my values? What are my ethics? What is my ethos? Right? What do I fight for? What do I stand for? What do I vater on? So there's lack of clarity. So what I want more than anything is I want clarity. And by the way, like I just said before, does clarity mean you'll never make mistakes? No. Again, a definition of absolute clarity is the ones. But what does clarity ensure? That when you make a mistake, what? You'll realize it. You'll know it. And hopefully if you know it, then you can remedy it. So my entire avoda in life is to get back to Gan Eden clarity. So says the Al-Sheikh, how do you do that? Yavo dodi ligano. So according to the Al-Sheikh, the beloved over here is Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael, I want you to come back to the Gan. I want you to come back to the Gan. What? And how can I get back to the Gan? Kadosh Baruch Hu, you exiled us from Gan Eden. How do I get back to the Gan? there's another gan. That's the gan of Sinai. The gan of Har Sinai. And what happens when you get to that gan? V'yochal pri megadav. Eat the precious fruit. What's the precious fruit of the gan? Mitzvos. Mitzvos. The gan is Torah. The peros are mitzvos. You want to recreate a Gan Eden experience in your life? It's Torah. It's Torah. It's Har Sinai. It's mitzvos. Now let's analyze this for just a moment. It's very important to understand because whenever we speak about Torah, we often assume that it's referring to... When I tell you this, Alshach, how do you envision it? So I experienced Gan Eden how? How? Through mitzvos? Limud HaTorah. So I think very often our reflexive kind of orientation is Limud HaTorah. So understand, Limud HaTorah is the first part of Torah. Right? Remember again, the entire point of Limud is Limud Al Menas Lasos. Now that is true. There is a concept of Limud Lishma as well. There is a power in Talmud Torah just for the sake of learning. That there is no question. But that's one chilek. But the real essence of Torah is Lilmot Amanas Lasos. So what is the Alshach saying? And this is so profound and so beautiful. You want to taste Gan Eden in your life? Live Torah. Not just learn Torah. Of course, you can't live it if you don't learn it. But live Torah. Live mitzvahs. If you live a life of holiness, that will give you Gan Eden. And I know it might sound very basic and very obvious, but what a profound idea. We're all striving to get back to Eden, right? If somebody would tell you, Eden that way, 5 miles, you wouldn't walk, you would run. You would run. And says the Alshich, but Eden can't be accessed geographically. Eden can only be accessed spiritually, through Torah, through mitzvahs, eating of the precious fruit. When you lead a life of holiness, when you lead a life of ruchnius, when you lead a life of Torah, and again, understand, what does it mean to live a life of Torah? Does it mean to divorce yourself from everything material? No. Everybody answers that question very quickly. Right? No, right? And this is very important. We spoke about this last week, because remember again, part of the beauty of Yiddishkeit is we don't believe in an ascetic lifestyle. Right? We believe in not getting lost in Gashmias. We believe in not making Gashmias your God or making Gashmias the be-all and end-all, but we don't believe in an ascetic lifestyle. We believe that Hashem Baruch Hu created Olam Hazeh for us to enjoy as well, but to enjoy responsibly and to enjoy in a holy fashion. But the entire essence is, and by the way, Torah helps you do that. Because what does Torah allow you to do? Torah gives you the prism through which to see everything in life. You see, people think, and this is incredibly important, sometimes you erroneously think that Torah is like memait, right? Torah constricts. Without Torah, I would be able to do all of this. With Torah, I could only do this, right? Smaller amount. Now, of course, it's true. Torah does restrict. Torah tells you I can do certain things, but what Torah also does is gives me such an expansive view of things. That suddenly what Torah allows me to do, Torah is for us what Gan Eden was for Adam. Gan Eden allowed Adam to see how a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu could come from everything in life. And that's why, again, La Abdullah Shamar, the different opinions, different aspects, are not mutually exclusive. So you could find HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you go out and you work the soil. And you can find HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you're davening. You can find HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you're keeping the animals out. You can find HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you're going ahead and ultimately and learning Torah. It's not mutual. So Torah gives us that same idea. Torah teaches us how to bring out the spirituality in every single thing in life. In everything in life. You know, there's a beautiful idea. Barab Levi Yitzhak Abradichev, Kedushas Levi, he says on the Pasuk, Va'asisa ma'akel gagecha. Va'asisa ma'akel gagecha. Right? You know the halacha, you're supposed to put a fence around the top of your roof, right? Because again, on a very simple level, you don't want anyone to fall off. So the Rebbe says so beautifully, he says, what's the other essence of that? Listen, that your home is supposed to be your beautiful cocoon of holiness, right? In your home is supposed to be a bastion of... Have a beautiful home. Have whatever kind of home. Build whatever kind of home you want. But it just should be a holy place. It should just be a... Vasisama kelegagecha ki pol hanofel mimena. You don't never want your home to be a place where people fall. You want to be your home to be a place where people grow. So I could build a beautiful home if I want. And the Torah teaches me how to go ahead and make that Gashmi structure into something spiritual. So you want to find Gan Eden, says the Al-Sheikh. You want to find Gan Eden? Gan Eden can be accessed through Torah. And this, I can't tell you, is such an incredible Yisrael. Because obviously I don't have to sell any of you on the importance of Torah, on the beauty of Torah. But sometimes I think Torah doesn't get its fair share. Because I think we often look at Torah as a system of laws, which of course it is, that teach us what we can do, what we can't do. That is true. But Torah is so much more. Torah is like, you know, I don't know if they have it now. I know when I was little, they used to have, like, in this, they still put prizes in cereal boxes? Okay. So they used to have, I still remember this mom, I guess it was Frosted Flakes. Frosted Flakes used to put in decoder rings, right? So what was the chabad of the decoder rings? And of course, you know, a great way to upset your parents is pour out the entire box in order to get the decoder ring. The decoder ring, which is like worth 3 cents. Right? So you get the decoder ring, and what's the little chabad of the decoder ring? I mean, I don't think it ever worked, but La Maisa, on the back of the cereal box, is a whole like jumbo. There's a decoder ring, shows you how to decode everything. That's what Torah is. The world is a jumble. Life is a jumble. Human existence is a big chalent. And sometimes it's hard to figure out what's what. So what's your moral compass? What's your moral compass? How do you decide what's right and what's wrong? How do you decide what's up, what's down? How do you decide what's tameh, what's tahar, what's kosher, what's treif? And I don't mean just in what you ingest. I mean in life. And that's Torah. That's Torah. Torah gives you, and we know this. We know this because when we are holding in a good place in Ruchnius, think about this in your own life. When you are holding in a good place in your Ruchnius, you see the world with greater clarity. You just see things with greater clarity. I know what I should do, I know what I shouldn't do. There's not really all that much gray when I'm holding in a good Ruchni place in life. When I'm not holding in such a good Ruchni place in life, that's where everything becomes a little bit more obscure. So you want the clarity of Gan Eden. What we wouldn't do to get back to Gan Eden. But that's not on the cards right now. But I can have Gan Eden. I can have at least the clarity of Gan Eden through Torah. And that in and of itself is the greatest aspect of Eden. And so, and again, whether it's through learning Torah, through living Torah, I just want to point this out. Because sometimes a person asks themselves, like, what do I get from this lifestyle? No one ever likes to articulate that question because it sounds very like a very unfrome question. But what do I get from this lifestyle? So, of course, the first answer is, what do you get from this lifestyle? And I say lifestyle, meaning, what do you get from Yiddishkeit? I'm sorry? Relationship with Baruch Hu, beautiful. I'm sorry? Fulfillment, excellent, good. So, excellent, good. Right? People often say, you know, it's funny, people often say Olam Haba. But you know, again, remember how many times Olam Haba mentioned in the Torah? No. Zero. Right? Very, very, very important Yisod. We of course, believe in it. Rama makes it one of the Ikarim of Emunah. But at the end of the day, Jews are very life-centric. We are very life-focused. Because at the end of the day, Olam Haba is great, but Olam Haba represents you getting the dividends of everything you did in this world. This world is where dynamic activity occurs. So the whole essence, what do I get out of Yiddishkeit? What I get is clarity. Because you could see, all you need to do is look at greater society around us. And you see what happens when you don't live with clarity. What you don't live with clarity. Right, even something as simple. Well, there's so many examples. I don't want to get mired in examples of this. But whether it's issues of gender, or whether it's issues of the place of God in society, whether it's issues of morality, if you don't have an anchor, it's ish or isha kala yasher be'inav yasa. Everyone does whatever they want. So the Torah Kedosha tells us, and by the way, that's what it means to live in outside of Gan Eden. Outside of Gan Eden means there is a lack of clarity in sometimes even the most basic things. But comes along the Al-Sheikh and says you could find it in Torah. Let me show you one more piece and then we'll stop. If we take a look at the Psikta Zutrasa number 11, which is a piece of the Medrash. So the Medrash writes, Yavo Dodi Lagano, let my beloved come to its garden, to his garden. Zeh Kodesh Baruch Hu. So interestingly enough, so remember, according to the Al-Sheikh, Yavo Dodi Lagano, who's the Dodi? Who's the Dodi? Klal Yisrael. Right? This is why I mentioned this before. In general, part of the incredible nature of Shir Hashirim is how, you know, again, the identity shift. So according to the Al-Sheikh, Yavo Dovdi Laganom, my beloved come to the garden, according to the Al-Sheikh, the beloved is Klal Yisrael, the Gano, whose garden is it? Is Kadosh Baruch Hu refers to? Har Sinai. Says the Medrash, no! Yavo Dovdi Lagano, the beloved, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is Ribbon Sha'olam. Zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sheyishra Shechina Sobeinehem, who will rest Tishchina between us, Shene'emar, V'shachanti B'soch B'nei Yisrael, V'isen Lechem Elokim. This is incredible. So the Medrash says, the Dodi is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's the garden? What's the Gano? Based on what the Medrash says, how would you understand what's the Gano according to the Medrash? He doesn't say it explicitly, but what would you intuit? Us. The Gan, according to the Medrash, is us. I am the Gan. You are the Gan. Yavo Dodi Ligano. Let my beloved HaKadosh Baruch Hu come to his garden. Who's the garden? Come to me. Come to me. So you know what the Medrash is saying? Do you know where Gan Eden is now in the post-Gan Eden world? The Gan Eden is inside of me. Gan Eden is in me. Now what does that mean? Gan Eden is in me. So of course it could be a reference to the neshama. But remember again, the Medrash quotes what pasuk? What pasuk? Pasuk from where? From the Mishkan, from Parshas Shuma. Va'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'secham sinai. You're familiar, I'm sure. Everybody knows the song. But people often don't realize that the words come from Rav Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, number 12, the beautiful words of Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. I'm not going to sing it for you. But Rav Hutner, look, the words themselves are so magnificently inspiring. Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, Lahadar Kavodo, Over Mishkan Mizbeach, Akim Lakarne Hodo, Ulaner Tamid Ekach Lias Isha Akida, Ulakarban Akriv Noes Nafshi Aichida. That wording of Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. The Gan, the Mishkan, the Va'asuli Mikdash is inside of me. Each of us has the ability to create a Gan Eden inside of ourselves. And that Gan Eden is the neshama you create. At the end of the day, everything you create in life can be taken from you. This is a very overwhelming, and I don't mean it to be like a little bit like a downer lesson, but think about this just a moment. Everything you create in life can be taken from you. You put a lot of effort into relationships, human relationships, do they endure forever? No. No, human relationships come and go. Even the most beautiful, loving, and meaningful relationships could be here one day and could be gone the next. You build a business, it could be here one day, build the next. And by the way, you build the yeshiva, it could be here one day, be gone. There's only one thing in this world that you can build and you can be absolutely assured that it will endure for all eternity, and that is your neshama. Your neshama. Now again, granted, your neshama could also go through ups and downs. I could build it today and I could demolish it tomorrow. The great news is, even if you demolish it through some terrible activity, it's never fully demolished. It's always there. It's always, you just have to rebuild it. That's the Bilvavi Mishkan Evna. Rav Hutner was trying to convey to us, what's the greatest Mishkan? What's the greatest Beis HaMikdash? What's the greatest Gan Eden? Think about this. Gan Eden came and went. Mishkan came and went. Bayis Rishon came and went. Bayis Sheni came and went. Okay, Mirzim, Bayis Shlishi, Mehirim Yaminu will come and will be here forever, Mirzah Hashem, B'Shah Tovim Mitznachos. But until that time, every other holy structure that exists in this world comes and goes. The only thing you could create in perpetuity is your neshama. That's the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. That's the Psikta Drasa. Yavo Dovdi Lagan Chash Baruch Hu. I want you to come to the Gan Eden. And listen to how beautiful this imagery is. Because what is the Medrash saying? The Medrash that says to Chash Baruch Hu, Yvon Shalom, I want you to come to the Gan Eden I created. Right? Because remember, again, we often think of Gan Eden from the perspective of man. But Gan Eden also served what purpose? Gan Eden was the rendezvous point between man and God. Right? Even after Adam eats from the eighth das Torah, what does the pasuk say? What does he hear? He hears HaKadosh Baruch Hu mishalech bagan. He hears the Yibon Shom's footsteps in the Gan. Gan Eden is the rendezvous point. Gan Eden is the meeting point between man and God. So first there was Adam Rishon's Gan Eden, and then there was a Mishkan, and then there was a Beis HaMikdash 1, Beis HaMikdash 2. Those were all the meeting points between man and God in this world. But in the absence of all of those structures, the meeting point becomes Bilvavi Mishkan Efna. You want Gan Eden in life, you could have Gan Eden. You could build Gan Eden. But whereas Gan Eden used to be something external to us, the only true Gan Eden you will find in this world is in the powerful neshama that you are willing to build for yourself. Yavo Dodi Ligano. I listen to what happens. I see, listen to how incredible this is. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu first creates Gan Eden, remember again, how does Adam get to Gan Eden? What did we say? We learned this. How does Adam get to Gan Eden? Right? What was the lashon of the pasuk? Vayikach. Rashi says, Lakcho bidvarim. So isn't that amazing this is? In the first Gan Eden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu entices Adam to come. In the new Gan Eden, what happens? What happens? I entice HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come. Yavo Dodi Ligano. Ribono Shalom. I want you to see what I've built. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I want you to see what I have created. I want you to see what I have made in this world. So ask a simple question. Have I built the type of Gan Eden? You know, if you know somebody's coming over to your house, depending on your general level of cleanliness, or someone's going to see your room. So depending on the general level of cleanliness you have, you may, you know, launch into a frenetic fury of activity to go ahead and clean everything up. So if I invite HaKadosh Baruch Hu to my Gan Eden, to my neshama, would I be happy? Would I be happy with what he saw? Would I be okay with it? Would I be okay with it? Or am I running to push stuff under the bed, trying to push the closet closed because there's so much stuff that's going on over here? But that's the goal. The Gan Eden of Adoration is no longer, but the ultimate Gan Eden is inside of me. The neshama I create. And by the way, they're not mutually exclusive, because remember, how do you create that personalistic Gan Eden? How do you create it? You create it with Torah. You create it with mitzvahs. That's how you create it. But the Gan Eden, everyone's looking for Gan Eden. Everyone's looking, where's Gan Eden? Stop looking outside and start looking inside. But ask myself, have I created a Gan Eden that is beautiful enough, that is dynamic enough, that I'm willing to invite the Ribono Shel Olam into it? Because that's the goal. Yavo Dodi Legano. Kadosh Baruch Hu invited Adam to go to his Gan Eden. And now we invite HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come to ours. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We're going to spend one more class on Gan Eden, Amir Hashem, on Wednesday.